a sound. Logic podcast.
Two guys with no credentials.
Reviewing Rolling Stone
500. Greatest album.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks again for joining us here on the SoundLogic podcast. Today, we're discussing album number 105. So different saying 100 in front of our,
I know.
Our numbers. I'm still getting used to it, but it's awesome. 105, this is At Fillmore East, a live album by the Allman Brothers Band.
I don't know what it is about this kind of jam bandy rock, but I press play on this album and it sounds so different than any other thing we've listened to in the other 104 albums so far. I know this is not new for us. We've already reviewed it. We'll be getting to our old conversation with Kelly here just in a minute. But is it an album that you've come back to from time to time, Mike? Or is this one that's just sat on the Spotify shelf since we last looked at it?
I'm going to be very honest and say no, I don't think it's one I've come back to hardly at all since we did it quite some time ago. However, I also want to say that in the last few days I've listened to it because I knew we were going to record an intro. I thought, well, I should at least refresh myself, and I've really enjoyed it. More, and I can't tell you why, but more than the first time I did enjoy it, but just find it, maybe I guess I just wasn't familiar with it, but I've listened to it a few times, and I'm really enjoying it this second time through. What about you? Have you revisited this at all since we did it?
Not at all, no. Okay. And I don't know if that has to do with there's something about a jam band that I love to watch live, but don't find myself drawn to in my listening experience. And I don't really listen to any live albums ever. Even my favorite artists.
Right.
I don't even really, I own a couple, in a mm-hmm. sort of completist effort to have the full catalog from a few groups, I really don't love live music on recordings, which is kind of funny thing to say for someone who claims to love music. You'd think I'd be just fine with them, and I can't even put my finger on exactly what it is that I don't love about them, but nothing really calls me back to this aside from good memories of our conversation with Kelly and enjoying the music. One that I'm glad to have spent some time with, but for whatever reason doesn't pull me back in. And I don't know, I'm wondering if these two lukewarm responses from us has to do with this bit of a dive here. This was at number 49. It's dropped more than 50 spots down to 105 here now. I wonder if the live jam band recording is something a little less popular these days. I don't know. There was an era when, like, Dave Matthews put out hundreds and hundreds of live concert recordings. I don't hear people talking about that sort of thing these days. Like, oh, did you get the bootleg? You know, I don't know. I should, even as I'm saying that, I'm realizing my daughter has watched people live streaming Taylor Swift shows on their iPhone. She'll sit and watch that. So it's not like people don't care about recorded live music, but I don't think we're packaging them and putting them out as albums in the same way as we once did. In the same prolific way, anyway.
It's huge. Like, you hit the nail on the head. You didn't say it, but it's accessibility. You know, if you wanted to hear a band live, you had to go.
Yep.
And the only other way was
if
they released a live album, which would have been very exciting, especially if you didn't have the means to get to a concert. Although, if you could buy a record, you could probably get a ticket.
Because or didn't live near a major city that had been passing through. Right, yeah.
So now, as you said, I can open TikTok almost any night and find a live concert. you know, that somebody's streaming. And yes, the Swift Nation, the Swifties, it's encouraged, and they're enjoying that moment of, you know, is she going to wear a different dress? What secret song, special song is she going to do?
Right. Is there cryptic language in here that might reveal when the next Taylor's version is coming out?
will we see Travis Kelce in the wings? You know, like just all this stuff about just being in that moment that we can do now. And even in the last 20, 30 years, you could find any live music, whether bootleg or legitimate copies, online. You know, from Napster on, right? So it's not really needed in that sense anymore. Although you will get a more, perhaps a more professional grade, and something that the artists, you know, kind of wanted, or at least hopefully they were involved. I want to jump back just for a quick second. Can I guess at what you said? You don't have many live albums. Can I guess which ones you do have?
Sure.
I'm gonna guess U2's Rattle and Hum.
Yeah, that one is sort of a live album. There's studio recordings there. They perform with people in spaces that didn't have an audience. It was it's a soundtrack more than a live album in my mind. But there are some live recordings there.
Okay, so I
yes,
I slightly missed the target there. I'm gonna guess Ben Folds Live.
I think I do have that one. Boy, I haven't listened to it in a long time. If I still have it, I don't know where it is.
And I'm guessing you have a Coldplay live album if they've released one.
Yeah, that's the only band right now that I still purchase a physical copy of their stuff when it comes out.
Right.
And I think I...
Because as you said, you're a completionist.
I've got everything from them. I mean, I used to be a lot worse than I am these days, certainly with when it comes to physical media. But I think I have some live music from Nickel Creek, maybe.
I was gonna guess them.
They don't have any full live albums, but they have a couple of live tracks on their Greatest Hits collection. And I do have Live Under a Blood Red Sky to complete my U2 collection, although I'm not even sure if it's currently complete these days.
U2,
the right ballpark.
So.
Yeah.
So,
but not much else. I don't know about you. How does that compare to your collection?
Oh, geez, I haven't gone through my CDs in a long time. I have. I don't think I have the same knee-jerk reaction as you do when it comes to compilation and live albums. I have. And I have a few DVDs, although I don't know if that counts. Yeah. But
that does feel slightly different, the visual along with it. But I can see what you're saying. Yeah. Though, yeah.
I have a Neil Young Live at Massey Hall CD. I have... What else do I have? And now I'm getting some records. I have some jazz records.
Oh, okay.
I have a live Herbie Hancock.
Yeah.
Which is in that big lot that I just got. I've got a live Dave Brubeck at one of the jazz festivals out on the West Coast, which is really cool. And CDs, I'm trying to think what other live albums. You know, I can't think of it. I haven't listened through my CDs in a while, but I have a few. But I do agree with you that I think a lot of times – I have Rush. I have Rush's Different Stages Live.
Okay.
Obviously. And I have their R30 DVD. I think a lot of times I prefer the studio versions of the live tracks.
Yeah.
Because that's exactly what they want it to be, and they honed it in and perfected it to be how they wanted us to hear it.
It's the one you've heard more often, so it probably has a familiarity level too.
And I can be fussy about quality. Like sound quality. So sometimes, you know, it's not so great. The live is not as great. So, we don't want to go too far off track, but yeah, live albums are different. Yeah. The one that I've had in my hands at the record store and I haven't grabbed yet is supposedly one of the best selling live albums ever is Peter Frampton's, what the heck's it called? comes alive. Oh, Frampton yeah. comes mm-hmm. alive. Is a double album, apparently the best selling live album ever. And I've had it in my hands, but I have not pulled the trigger on it. So I probably will get that one at some point. Cause that's pretty famous,
yeah.
but
yeah.
yeah, that's, live albums. I do want to say, we don't want to make this too long. I want to say one more thing. Listening through this again, you're laughing cause it's already long. I do want to say that listening through this album, you know, we think of this as a blues band, which they are, and this is a blues jam, but there was one or two tracks, and I can't tell you exactly. I think it's You Don't Love Me, but I find that the titles, I get mixed up on this album sometimes, but there's one or two tracks where they have these extended sections in the middle that are extremely jazzy, like very jazzy, where they switch. They switch that very swing bluesy. They switch from that kind of bluesy thing and go into like a jazz. They mess around with timing signatures in a more jazz oriented way, as opposed to a blues way. Less of like, you know, The Ocean by Led Zeppelin, where it's, they change around the time signatures from bar to bar, but it's still very, it doesn't swing at all. This is jazzier. So there's those big sections that were really jazzy with the organ. Allman switches, you know, to a more jazz style on his guitar. So, and the bass, and this walking jazzy bass lines, in those sections. So that, I did remember when I heard it, but I had forgotten until then, the huge kind of jazz influence in their music on this. I had just kind of written it off as this is, you know, just your stereotypical blues jam band from the early 70s, which in some ways it is, but in other ways it's like so much more. So it's been really cool to come back to this. I'd encourage you to do the same, to just put it on. It's not something that I would have on all the time. I actually don't mind this as background because so much of it is instrumental. But there's also, like I said, a part of it that you can really dig into.
Yeah.
And I'm also remembering, you mentioned how much we enjoyed our conversation with Kelly. I really appreciated her passion for the music and also, you know, the nostalgia it had in her life, memories with her family members. Yeah. Absolutely. And seeing the band, of course, a much later, more recent version of the band, but the band nonetheless,
and which really, really which cool. Which reminds me, their kids are touring now, the Almond Betts band, and are coming to State College. So I might have to go see them in June, playing, I think, tracks from the Almond Brothers, but in a similar kind of live jam band feel. Could be interesting to get a generational glimpse at them in that way.
Cool. Really cool.
I'm looking forward to listening to this one again. I think I remember I liked it. It's been a little while now, but this will give me a good reason to go back and check it out again. We hope you enjoy this revisit as well.
Yeah, so stick around before we play that previous review. We want to tell you that next episode, we can look forward to album number 106. We jump ahead a few decades. The album is Live Through This by Hole, the band from the 90s fronted by Courtney Love. So we hope you'll join us next time for that. We hope you'll stick around for our conversation with Kelly Dowd about this album, Live at Fillmore East by the Allman Brothers Band. All that coming up right after this.
Former guest call-in.
Hey, Ben and Mike, my favorite two Canadians. This is Kelly over in Detroit. Here to send a message about Allman Brothers at Fillmore East. Thanks for having me back. I just wanted to say, I think that where we're at in the hundreds now, 100, I think it's 105 versus in the 50s, is probably the right place for this album with all the different diverse genres and artists that got added to the list. I think this probably is more right sizing where they should be on there. Everyone should still listen to it. It's a great live album, one of the few live albums on there, but it kind of seems like this is where it should be compared to in the 50s. Thanks for having me back, and go Lions forever.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC. Welcome to the
Soundlogic Podcast. Two guys with no credentials.
Reviewing Rolling Stone
500. Greatest album.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Soundlogic Podcast, and today we are discussing album number 49 on Rolling Stone Magazine's Top 500 Albums list. This is At Fillmore East by the Allman Brothers Band.
Okay, the Allman Brothers Band.
We're really excited tonight to have Kelly Dowd with us. Kelly is our special guest, and she and I crossed paths just briefly here at Penn State University. I think our first collaborative kind of project or experience was working on the MLK commemoration here on campus. Penn State has a really, pretty intense week of celebrating MLK and a week that has tried to stretch even beyond that throughout the academic year to remember MLK and his legacy. I think the people who end up collaborating on projects like that end up just being good people because they care about injustice and they care about the campus and the community. And that's how I remember Kelly, even though we don't know each other all that well. I know you as someone who cares deeply about students, and especially students who are marginalized for any number of reasons. Just recently, during this coronavirus staycation that we're all on here right now, I posted a sort of challenge, I guess, that a friend had shared with me to try and list a band for every letter of the alphabet that you had seen live. And I made it to almost all 26 letters. I think I had three or four that were blanks. But Mike posted and his list, and Kelly posted her list, and I think for letter A, you had the Allman Brothers, and I was like, oh, perfect. We've got that album coming up here. Would you consider being a guest here on the Soundlogic Podcast? Really excited to have you with us, Kelly. Mike and I grew up just across the border in southern Ontario as a native from Michigan who's progressive. You're essentially just about Canadian, so we're glad to have you with us and feel like kindred spirits.
I spent money on 1999 in Windsor, so I can almost see it from my house, actually.
It's funny, I talked to friends who grew up around the Great Lakes who would drive to Ontario for the lower drinking age. Our friends in Ontario would drive to Quebec because it was 18 there, so it's all about proximity, I guess. Yeah. Well, thanks so much for being with us, and we also know that you are someone who's pretty passionate about music, and your impressive list of bands that you've seen live, I think, will add to this episode deeply. The only other thing to add, I guess, before we get rolling here is this happens somewhat frequently on the Soundlogic Podcast, but all three of us were born after this album came out that we're about to talk about. So take our thoughts with a slight grain of salt. And if you were someone who came of age as this album was coming out and have additional notes or thoughts to send our way, please do. And we'll be happy to share those on a future episode.
Ben, I think I know I can speak for you and for me as well. This is not only an album, but also a band I am just not that familiar with, or at least not before we started this. So the simple choice is just to turn right over to Kelly at this point. We'll talk about a lot of things and a lot of your experiences and some of your memories, but I want to start in this way. Could you tell us how you came about this album and if you remember when you first acquired it and some of your memories, if you have any, of when you first listened to it?
Well, thank you for asking me to be on this. I've never been on a podcast, but I listen to a lot of them, so I'm kind of nerding out and excited. But yeah, so I don't know exactly when I first heard this whole like album as a whole, but Allman Brothers in general have been around in my life for a long time. My brother is really into, you know, Southern rock and jam bands. Like, I feel like Allman Brothers are kind of hard to describe as far as like what category they really fit in, because like they're blues, but they're normally considered rock. But yeah, also this like jam band thing that's like goes on as yeah. well. And then there's like organ in there that's not normally in like normal rock songs. So I don't know. I feel like there's something different about them that my brother kind of introduced me to. So like the first time I saw Allman Brothers was at Pine Knob in outside Detroit in 2001. I think I was 16. I'm positive I was 16 because I had to drive everyone home. I'm pretty sure my brother fell asleep in the grass at one point during the show. But okay. It was a really good experience. Like, just like how it is on this album, like songs would go in so many different directions for 20 minutes and then make it back to the original like piece at the end. Somehow you get back to it. So I always felt like they took me on a ride that kind of was part of like getting me into music, like really into music, especially like classic rock and that kind of stuff.
What an amazing way to be introduced to rock and roll music with one of the great rock and roll, blues, jam band, whatever you want to call them. And you're right, they are unique because they blend a lot of those different genres all together. The phrase I've heard is Southern fried blues rock. But then there's that jam band component too. It's really cool. And I think it's so unique that someone your age from your kind of upbringing listens to this kind of music, because a lot of the people up here, I mean, I guess, you know, you have different influences, but a lot of the people your age up here do not typically listen to this type of music. So that's really, really cool.
Yeah. My mom's really into music. I'd say my dad's more of like an ELO. That was like his jam.
Okay.
And then my mom, though, loves like Sabbath and Alice Cooper. And those were like the bands that she grew up on, but is also like a huge Bon Jovi fan. So I've seen Bon Jovi like 13 times in concert. Shout out to Bon Jovi. My mom's name's Jody, and her license plate says Bon Jovi.
That's awesome.
That's awesome.
But the other band too is Black Crowes, and I feel like Black Crowes also comes from Georgia. And like, just listening to this album today, I could hear a lot of like Black Crowes' influence.
Yeah.
And I've seen them probably 12 or 13 times too. In my first show ever being, Oasis and Black Crowes. That was amazing. The brother we loved for.
I wonder sometimes what geography has to do with how music gets created. Like, we talked about a few albums ago, we talked about Bob Marley and you know, that sort of reggae sound that came off of the island of Jamaica and the Caribbean. There's been moments in my life, I don't really ever listen to country music, but Mike and I picked sweet corn down in southern Georgia, and driving a tractor in Georgia listening to country music just felt so right. And I thought, like, what is it about like like place and setting and context that just makes everything click? When you've got like the Black Crowes and the Allman Brothers from totally different eras, but from essentially the same place, making music that captures kind of the same spirit. I don't know. There's something about like where we're from, or something about the culture that we experience geographically, I think that does play a role in like how music sounds and how it gets shaped. There's exceptions to that too, I guess. We've already talked about the band a couple of times. Four of the five members are Canadian, but they make this like folk Americana stuff about the Civil War, and I just have no idea how they wrote that stuff. But
Kelly, I have a question for you, and I don't know if you remember this or not. When you saw the Allman Brothers in 2001, and then you said you saw them again later on, and one thing we're going to talk about is, you know, obviously that's a very different lineup than when they recorded this album, because two of their members had unfortunately passed just after this album was recorded and released. So was that with like Derek Trucks and those other guys when you saw them?
Yeah, I think the first time, I don't think it was. I don't think Derek Trucks was there. I don't remember him being there, like 2001. Right. But then I want to say it was Jazz Fest and not Voodoo Fest. It must have been Jazz Fest 2008. That sounds more right to me.
Okay.
In New Orleans. I used to live in New Orleans like 3-ish years. But so, yeah, I think Derek Trucks was definitely there for that. And I've seen him separately as well. Really good.
He's very good.
As Mike mentioned, I'm very new to the Allman Brothers, but I do know some of their more popular radio play songs. And one thing that Mike and I discussed today before recording was some of their radio hits have quite a different sound than what we hear on this live album. I wonder how much that has to do with the band makeup changing over time, or the era of this music in 1971, or what. But perhaps we'll get to that as we go through some of the songs on this record.
Details, 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 details. So this album was released July 1st, 1971. It was their first live album, and it was their third album. They had done two studio albums before this. So there's seven tracks on this album. Four of them are covers, and then Greg Allman wrote Whipping Post, and Dickie Betts wrote In Memory of Elizabeth Reed, and then Hotlanta was a group effort that the whole group wrote, and the rest are covers by different, you know, a blues artist and different artists there. Here's an interesting point that I wanted to talk about a bit and kind of get your opinion on, Kelly. This album went to number 13 on the U.S. Billboard charts, and it got there very fast, faster and higher than their first two studio albums had gone, which is very uncommon that a live album would do this. And this ended up becoming their creative and commercial breakthrough. This is kind of what got them really well known in the music scene. I tried to look this up a bit, but do you have any thoughts on why you think this is, that a double album with only seven tracks of massive jam tracks would shoot them kind of into the limelight in the rock world and would be more successful than their two previous studio albums?
Yeah, I kind of looked into it a little bit too. I don't know if, like, when it climbed to 13, was it, it says it like it was certified gold in 71.
Yeah.
That's also when Dwayne Allman died. And
okay.
So I wonder too if like part of it was he passed away and people dug into it because it was around the same time.
Yeah.
But also it could be a lot of other people passed away right before that too. That could be where people have like dug into some different stuff, you know?
Yeah. You're right. Around 1970, it was a whole bunch right around there, like Janis Joplin and Jimi Hendrix and Jim Morrison, I think all right around 1970. Dwayne Allman in 1971.
Released in July and he died in October. So I would assume that that could have something to do with it.
Yep, that's a really good point.
Maybe didn't find, you know, and if that was the album that was out when he passed, yeah.
Sure. And then it kind of captures a moment, right? It captures one of the last live moments in his life. Yeah, that's a really good point. I was just reading the stats there. It was puzzling to me without seeing the whole picture. Like, wow, that's, you don't see that a lot, that a live album. Usually the live albums, you know, the fans get them, but they're not as popular. You know, the fans want to have them, and it's a special moment, but they're not as popular as the studio albums. But this definitely was. So yeah, you're right. It went gold in 71. So in October. So just in a few months, which was a lot for back then. And then it did go platinum, which is a million in 1992. So it took a while to get there, but continued to be something that people were obviously consuming. As I mentioned, this is a double album with only seven tracks, which means they're very long. And the record executives didn't want to do this. They thought that it would just be career suicide and that nobody would buy it, and the manager had to fight the executives to convince them, no, this is really good, you've got to release this. So they conceded, and then that's why we get We get a few sides with only one track on it. I think two of the sides only have one track.
I was curious if Zeppelin had done their live album before this or not. Like, Dazed and Confused was like crazy long, I remember, on their live album. That people don't normally add these songs that go on their record, you know?
Right.
Because, they were trying to get hits and things that were going to play on the radio. Which, like, Ben, you mentioned before, like, a lot of their songs, like Ramblin' Man, I hear it on the Weather Channel. Like, it's a song that you hear it everywhere. But it's not, like, it's not on this album, and this is their highest selling album. So, right. I think, some of this stuff isn't commercial. It wasn't made to be, necessarily played on the radio.
Yeah, and yet it does extremely well and is renowned. I think just being on this list reminds us just of how rare, like you were saying, Mike, for a live album to do what this is doing or did. We've only had one other live album to this point on the Rolling Stone Top 500 list. That was James Brown Live at the Apollo from 1962. Mm-hmm. And we don't get another one until number 88. We get a Johnny Cash album live at Folsom Prison. And I think that's it for the top 100. It takes a while even to get to the next one. I think 144 is the next one. That's a BB King album there. So like, you know, top 100 albums of all time, there's only three that were live albums. It's just not a thing that you often hold up as like iconic music. I think often because it's it doesn't sound as good as their studio albums. And I think that struck me as I was listening to this, like how exceptional they do sound live. And I would assume if I was their manager trying to get a record executive to release this, you just have to point to the sound quality. I think, Mike, we mentioned this when we talked about James Brown too, that like his performance on that Live at the Apollo album could be live if it wasn't for the crowd noise. Everything was just so spot on. And you get that same vibe here with at Fillmore East. Like, I don't hear any for sort of a jam band to just be hitting every single note. It's just incredible, and I think shows their talent and their skill.
Definitely, and you know, I want to expand on that a little later. But it's well recorded, it's well produced, it's well performed. There's no issues there.
Yeah.
It's great.
Oh, I love hearing you guys like talk about, you haven't really listened to it. And, like, I've been listening to it for so long now that I'm like, oh, you're having for the first time. Like, Duane Allman was an incredible guitarist, like, in the same line as, you know, Hendrix and all those guys, I think, at least, like, and from this album, I think shows his skills too. And then when he like harmonizes with Dickie Betts, ooh, that's my favorite.
I love hearing you get excited about that stuff.
Yeah.
And you know, this is one of the, as we've talked before, this is a longer album, so it was kind of hard sometimes to carve, especially, you know, Ben and I both have younger families, to carve out the time to listen to the whole thing all at once was really challenging. But, you know, because you're kind of like, okay, nobody bother me for 23 minutes. I need to listen to Whipping Post.
Yeah, right.
Start to finish. Just one song. Okay, guys. So, it's that was a challenge, but certainly was worth it. I want to talk about the songs more. And before we do that, we always really enjoy talking about the album artwork. And you're fortunate, Kelly, to have, you know, in your possession, a vinyl copy. So you get that huge sleeve instead of a little CD or a little thumbnail on the computer. You get to look at the big sleeve of this really cool picture of the guys hanging out in front of all their equipment cases. And then with the stencil letters, I love on the top case on the top left, the Allman Brothers Band at Fillmore East. I would imagine that would have been put in, obviously not Photoshop back then, but edited in afterwards. I don't think they would have had it say that on their gear for the show. Am I right in thinking that?
I would assume so, although it doesn't look edited. It looks pretty spot on. I don't know, maybe it's because it's black and white.
They could have just cut it in there, posted it in there.
I feel like the actual record's in the other room. I almost want to like go get it to see if you can tell. But I feel like it would probably be laid over top too, because this is their case.
Yeah.
Traveling in general. I don't think they bought special cases for this trip.
No, it's just, so, yeah, just their gear. But I love the design element there for the cover. It's really, really cool. And just it's great to see the guys all smiling and, you know, enjoying their time there, because when I hear them play music, it just sounds like just an absolute joy just to be jamming. I don't, Kelly, are you a musician as well?
I sing. I did a choir for a long time.
Yeah, so I mean, anybody who's performed, jamming is a really, really fun thing to do. And when you can just play for minutes at a time and there's really no structure and everybody has freedom to do what they want, there can be a lot of joy there. And I kind of hear that when I listen to the music, when I listen to this album and they go on for 20 minutes, you know, I imagine they're just having a blast. And I find that's really reflected in this photo as well.
Yeah, it has somehow the capacity to look both staged and really casual at the same time. I don't know how they pulled that off. It's clearly like someone saying, okay, you sit here and you sit here and you sit here. But maybe it was like between serious pictures where someone cracked a joke. There's some lightness, and it is very candid despite it being very staged as well.
Yeah, for sure.
I like the choice to go black and white too. It wasn't too long ago that we were talking about Patti Smith's Horses and sort of stripped down look that gave that album cover. There's something really nice about that aspect here as well.
The back of it connects to the front. So like when you go to the back, it has some more members of the band, like, you know, the extra folks that are playing additional instruments or moving stuff around are on the back of it.
Oh, no way.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. We often miss that when we just look at a stock image, that the back of the vinyl usually has something cool as well.
Yeah. But it's one of those where you like open it up and it's one big picture.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm curious now. I want to go see this other.
Yeah. <gotta look. laughs> So this album in its original form has 7 tracks, and they are Statesboro Blues, Wake Up Mama, Turn Your Lamp Down Low, Done Somebody Wrong, Stormy Monday, You Don't Love Me, Hotlanta, In Memory of Elizabeth Reed, and Whipping Post. And the big jams are You Don't Love Me and on side 2, and Whipping Post on side 4, which each get their own side because they're so big.
Mike, I think that's the first time you've listed all the tracks on a double album.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Because, yeah, some of those compilation ones like Robert Johnson and Muddy Waters is like 50 tracks. Yeah, I don't do that.
Yeah. There's only 7 songs on a double album.
Yeah, right. Yeah, then I'll do it. Statesboro Blues is by Blind Willie McTell. Stormy Monday, T-Bone Walker. Oh yeah, Done Somebody Wrong. We got Elmore James. I just, I'm not really a blues guy, so I don't know all some of the blues greats from, you know, the 40s and 50s and 60s. But it's a theme that when we listen to blues artists, even Zeppelin in their first album, blues artists seem to constantly pull from the artists that came before them, and not only just in influence, but they are often playing their tunes and recording and releasing their tunes as well, mm-hmm. in amidst their original material, which is, it almost seems like a tradition.
Yeah, Rolling Stones too is a big one.
Yeah, for yes, absolutely. You're right.
I appreciate what they've done with these songs, though. I haven't heard the originals necessarily of all of them, but I think they do them justice.
Yeah. I think they put their flavor into them. You know, one of the big changes when we think about that is, you know, the technology and the instruments and the amplification that those previous artists didn't have the opportunity to have at that point. So you can do so much more when you have the technology these guys had. Ben, why don't we go to you, because you've been kind of a bit of a spectator so far on this one, which is fine. any favorite tracks or moments that jumped out to you right away?
I had this on during dinner tonight.
Oh, how'd that go?
I got to ask my family what they thought. it was fine. I caught one of our kids kind of like tapping her fork in one song at one point. But when I asked what they thought of it, our oldest said, I'm not really sure. Kind of reminds me of classical music. I get kind of bored when there's no one singing. And I realized, like, I don't think I ever would have drawn the line between a jam band and classical music. But there is something about, like, the skill set required to make music that doesn't have a lyrical hook but draws you in anyway. I thought that was just a really interesting sort of childlike perspective for her to offer. I mentioned then that, you know, I think it draws a little bit more on jazz and has that sort of free spirit of jazz music. And she kind of understood that too. But she said something funny, like, it's like classical music, but it's got rock instruments, which just makes it really weird. That was that's funny. Cute. And it kind of made me wonder, like, how much of a hurdle that is for other people too. You know, Mike and I kind of grew up, we grew up fairly sheltered Christian experiences for the most part, but we also listened to a lot of classic rock radio, and we were both admitting, as we sort of skimmed through some of their radio hits, that we weren't, we wouldn't have been able to say that they were songs by the Allman Brothers. I wonder sometimes if that hurdle is there for other people too, that when they've got these sort of like longer jam musician kinds of tracks, it takes a certain kind of person to really connect. I had some similar kinds of feelings when we talked through Dark Side of the Moon. And I think what Pink Floyd and the Allman Brothers both share is this like musical nerdiness that you've almost got to have a sense of why improvisational jam sessions are exceptional, especially done to this caliber. If you don't have any sense of how hard it is to play a guitar solo over another guitar solo, or to keep up with a bass player as they're walking their bass around, you just don't get why this is exceptional. I think when you've ever just messed around with any kind of level of jamming with your buddies, you suddenly get this whole new appreciation for when something is really, really good. This album was long enough that it was still playing after dinner. So we cleaned up to the dinner, and I was tasked with loading up the dishwasher. So it was nice today. And so the whole family left the house and went outside to play. And I just cranked it on the stereo so that I could hear it nice and loud while I was cleaning up. And that gave me a whole other kind of appreciation too, that the live vibe hit me in a way that it hadn't previously, where I was listening to it in a sort of background music kind of level. When it was that volume and that level, the music kind of washed over me in a way that I was like, oh, okay, I get it. And it was deeply moving. Specific tracks, I really like Stormy Monday. I'm not sure why, but that song in particular, I get excited when it rolls around to that third track. And but the other thing that I'm noticing in the last couple of weeks going through this album, maybe more than any other record on this list so far, my appreciation for this increases exponentially almost every time that I listen to it. I think my very first time through, I kind of yawned and was like, eh, what are we doing after this album? I'm ready to move on. And then every listen since then, I've been like, oh, wow, I didn't notice that the first time. Oh, this is here. Okay, I see what they're doing there. And makes me wonder, you know, if I just keep listening for another week or two, this might become my favorite album of all time or something. You know, like, it just keeps going up in that kind of extreme way. So yeah, I don't know. It's kind of wonderful. The only thing else that I'll add, I guess, is that I've said several times on this podcast so far that no song should be longer than 5 minutes. And so this is not meeting that criteria. And yet there's something there that I really, really enjoy. So I don't know. I guess every rule is made to be broken. So I'm going to have to think about that a little bit more. What about you, Mike? You're also kind of new to this. Do you want to take a stab before we dive into some of Kelly's thoughts as a longtime listener?
Oh. Sure. I want to say that when I heard You Don't Love Me, that was the point in my listening of this album that kind of grabbed me. I was listening through and the first three tracks, so yeah, okay, blues, jam band, you know, this sounds good, good sound. Great players, you know, and I was enjoying it, but You Don't Love Me really was when I was sold on the album. The way the song starts with they get the audience clapping, and then the band joins in, and then just hearing, I really enjoyed the really showcased the organ and the harmonica on that track. It showcases everybody over almost 20 minutes, but I think that song was when I really felt that vibe of what the audience that night was feeling, and I really enjoyed just the whole feel of the song. And when you do a song or a jam session that's that long, you really get a sense of every player and every voice there. When they all get a little moment to shine, you can hear, I mean, you can obviously hear Dwayne Allman doing what he does so well there, and he's really showcasing on that one, as he does on other tunes as well. But I think that was the one that stands out to me the most. Again, I'm not a blues expert or blues rock expert, so it's harder for me to pick out all the little points throughout this that make it so good, but I do recognize that it's very good. I did enjoy it, and that was one that stuck out for me. So Kelly, we move to our expert here. Kelly, what jumps out to you when you listen to this album? Is it just the whole thing, or are there certain moments that you really enjoy or that grab you?
I mean, first, I think I feel really privileged to have seen them live, because yeah. I think this showcases that they're like a live band, like they need to be seen live to really experience what they're about. Like, you don't get the same feel from a lot of their other songs. I think the beginning is like, it starts off really like happy, as far as like Statesboro blues feels happy, even if like the subject isn't necessarily happy, because the blues but I've always feel kind of happy. And I think by like Stormy Monday, we've moved into kind of storytelling almost, like within the show, because it has a lot of like where it grows and like then recedes back. Good guitar solos, like every song. And then, two, I think I'm a big fan of In Memory of Elizabeth Reed, too, which when I was digging, there's I think that song was, it's a Dickie Betts song, the name Elizabeth Reed comes from a tombstone in Georgia that he just saw the name, but the song is supposed to be about Boss Skaggs' girlfriend that he was having an affair with.
Wow.
That changes the song for you at all. As many good rock blues songs are about lost love.
Yeah.
With changed names, Layla.
Yeah.
But
yep.
That, I really like it, that song in particular, and this version of it, because this is on a different album, the studio version. And then Whipping Post is like my all-time favorite Allman Brothers song. I like that it's by itself on the one side, because it is kind of its own experience, I think.
Right.
It sounds different than every other song too. It's much more like, you can hear his kind of anguish in the song. And I mean, he's comparing like his lost love to being whipped. So, like it's obviously intense.
Yeah.
I think you can like really feel that in the song. And I like every version of this song. Even the studio version too is long, but not 23 minutes long, but
right.
With the iconic nature of this album, have these tracks all become sort of staples of their live shows? When you've seen them in the past, have they played through any of these?
Yeah, they definitely always play Whipping Post. It might not always be that long. I feel like Elizabeth Reed usually does last a lot longer. It was a long time ago, but the songs, I can remember them just like going on and on. We're like,
yeah, right.
It's been an hour and we're still in the same song, but then all of a sudden it loops back to the beginning, and then you're like, oh man, they're coming back to it. Like the same song comes back. Your favorite, lines, the one more time with the chorus kind of thing. Like you made it full circle, where I'd say like Done Somebody Wrong, like the second track would have been my like go to the bathroom song. You know what I mean? Like you get that song where you like go get another beer, because you know the next song is going to be fire and you need to be back for the next song. But you can go get a beer or pee real quick before the next two are gone. Yeah.
That's funny.
Their shows were always really fun in general. Like they do Shakedown Row, so they have the whole, I mean, because I saw them with the Dead too. It's probably some of the Deadhead folks. But they do the thing called Shakedown Row, where there's like all these people out like selling goods and like making little grilled cheeses they're selling and like hemp necklaces and like that kind of stuff that people are like, trying to make money at the tailgating at the Allman Brothers show.
That's awesome. I was somewhat surprised to see that Whipping Post is one of their most played tracks on Spotify. You don't often think that a 23-minute song is going to like rise to the top of a streaming service, but I guess especially if it is a staple of their live performances throughout the years, that's an interesting dynamic to continue to have it be something that fans especially continue to return to.
So as you've heard us talk about, we do have a Spotify playlist for the Sound Logic podcast, and we'd like to pick a couple tracks from each album we review. Kelly, what track would you pick for our Spotify playlist? A bit of a challenging question for this album, because some of them are very long, but if there was a song that you wanted people to hear from this album, which one would you pick?
I mean, I think Statesboro Blues is a good choice as like an introduction to Allman Brothers, if that's the only Allman Brothers song that's going to be on the playlist. Since this is the only album, I think that's in the top. I would say that one, if only because like every other song is 20 minutes long. I don't know how long this playlist is. I mean, my number one choice would be Whipping Post. And even, does it count if you lifted it from another album because it's the shorter version versus it being from this one?
I mean, we kind of do whatever we want.
Yeah. I mean, we're going to end up with a playlist that has 1,000 songs on it, so I don't think that time is really that crucial to be considering here. So let's put Statesboro Blues and Whipping Posts on there. That'll be two good ones to add.
Perfect. So here's an interesting question, and one we ask every time, especially it becomes more challenging with some of the older albums. But is this album still relevant? And again, this is. Some of these questions are challenging for this album because it is so different than a lot of the things we've listened to. But Kelly, when you think of the music world today, and you've seen a lot of bands and different types of music live. Where does this music fit in today's world?
I feel like it fits in the live music scene. Like, we're on pause right now, but live music and concert scenes and festivals in particular have become huge. I mean, like, that's the way that artists are making a lot of their money now, is through concerts. And so I was planning to go to Bonnaroo actually this year. I'm like, I'm getting up there in age, but I gotta go to some camping festivals before I'm cool. Get to live it up a couple more times. But I think that's where it really could fit, is like in the live scene. But obviously they're not, you know, playing, but similar bands like Derek Trucks, for instance, or like Robert Johnson, y'all mentioned before, are is similar in vein and have that same like jam bandy and good musicianship with it. I mean, I think it's relevant. I think we mentioned before too around like all of the black blues artists that wrote majority of these songs that this kind of era of blues rock was playing, and they didn't necessarily get the recognition that they maybe deserved for these songs. But if anything, this is an outlet to then go find those artists that I had never heard of, but that we now can access their music digitally.
Yeah.
That we might have not been able to touch before.
I like that. I think, too, here there is a, I don't know, just a proficiency for how to play live, too. You can tell the crowd is hanging on everything that they're doing, and they're taking the crowd on a journey. I've been to very... You know, one of my favorite bands is Coldplay, and their shows are very produced and not very improvised at all. And I like holding this up in contrast to an experience like that, because it reminds me just of how diverse a music experience can be. I don't listen to this style of music so much, and I don't know a ton of people who are, but I think that there are still lots of people who love chasing bands around the country to hear how they're going to sound on a given night. We've had on guests already who, you know, if a band is in their area, you know, if they're from, say, Toronto, they'll go see them in Montreal, Toronto, Detroit, Buffalo. They'll try and get to, you know, as many concerts in that stretch as they can, and to try and catch something different each time. And I think that's something incredible. And I think especially held up to the rest of this list here, to be one of the very few live albums included, I think is saying something as well. What about you, Mike?
Oh, boy. Those were really good answers. I struggle with this one. Personally, I really enjoyed it, and I really see the significance of it. I see its place. I think that a couple challenges with the way that especially young people listen to music today, the long playing track is not something like my kids can't get through a 20 minute track. Are you kidding me? Like that's not going to happen. And I think that a lot of younger people struggle with doing anything for a long period of time. I know that's a generalization. It might not be totally fair, but I think that to sit through that and not have a lot of movement and changes and quick kind of little things, that's a challenge for the way that music is consumed. And I think that the way that rock music is played today is very different. However, I think that within the blues world, and to an extent within the rock world, I think this is still very, very relevant, and you would turn to it for influence. If you're in the recording studio with people who know this music, they're going to be turning to this to be inspired. So I think, as we've discussed before, maybe some of its relevance is in the way people listen to it today, but some of it is in more of a kind of historical way, that almost like a textbook you would go to it to to learn, you know, the history and learn where some of this music came from, and to hear one of the best, you know, blues rock guitarists ever play, and a person who, you know, left far too soon and didn't get to really blossom into the musician and performer that he could have been, unfortunately. So yeah, it's one that I struggle with. I think I'll just say it certainly has its place. I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah.
I know when you were talking about like kids these days and like how they're, do they have the attention span and stuff? Some of the music kind of does remind me of electronic music now, and that.
Okay. Yeah.
That a lot of like rise and fall, like you're waiting for that moment. And like a lot of the songs don't have words, or if they do, it's like one or two words that are repetitive or like small, like chunks of words, you know?
That's true.
I don't know. There's something to be said about like jam bands are now more this like electronic rave scene that's happening.
And those songs can be very long, right?
DJs around and like, it very much has like a culture to it, similar to like jam bands. I never really thought about that before, but I don't know. Something you said made me think of it.
No, I like that. That's a good point.
Do any of you know, this is a band that has people of different racial ethnic backgrounds in it, which is not too common even still today. Do you know where they held up as kind of pioneers for that sort of thing in the early 70s?
That part, I don't know. I know that they stand apart from like Lynyrd Skynyrd. And I guess if that's like one way I'm measuring like Southern fucking rock kind of thing, because they're not quite that. Like they're just like a little bit different.
Yeah.
And maybe that is because they had, you know, a diverse membership.
Yeah.
I think it's an important thing to talk about. We've talked about that. I mean, that shaped a lot of the music we've talked about. Especially in the 60s and 70s with different racial tensions, and it was a big part of a lot of the music and activism as well. So no, it's definitely relevant. Okay. So this album, so this is kind of the, you know, the reason we started this whole project. This album comes in at number 49 of the top 500 albums of all time. So what do you think about that ranking? Ben, I want to start with you. This is 49th best ever. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I really struggle with what to do with compilation albums. Live albums are something, this is only the second time we've ever had to talk about one, but I think I feel a little bit better about their inclusion on this list, even though you could argue that this is also a compilation of their music. It's just a performance of a compilation of their music. I respect these a little bit more, and so unlike with the compilation albums where I always want to push them down, I'm fine with this one being here, and could maybe even see it going up just based on the quality. This is, I think, an album that I'm just fine with its spot here. I think if we had heard it for the first time at number 20, I might have been a little surprised it was that high. But if it had shown up at number 100 or something like that, I probably wouldn't have been too shocked that it was down that low. So, yeah, I don't know. Right here around 50, I think is just fine in my book. I like it more than some of the albums we've already tackled, and I'm sure there will things that will come all along that I'll like more than this one. But I'm fine with it being right here.
Kelly, what do you think? And I know it can be a challenging question if you're not as familiar with the list as Ben and I are. It's kind of studying it for over a year.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to have to dive into the list and see where these albums are, because I'm interested. But, I mean, I think it's fair, that's for sure. If this is the only Allman Brothers album that's on here, then I think it's in a good spot, because they do have a lot of other great albums that aren't touched. So, of all of them, if they're going to pick one, I'm glad they picked this one. Because, yeah, again, it just showcases something that other bands don't necessarily have, is that, like, improv, live, like, just really good sound.
I think I'm okay with this ranking. I'm again, a live album, you know, to me, it's always surprising to get it this high on the list. But I think because of how successful it was and how it kind of really projected their popularity at the time, I'm happy with the ranking. I don't really have any issue with it. Not a lot of controversy that time.
No. I guess the only thing I'll add is I'm really glad I got to experience it. I think there have been a few on this list that I've been like, I don't think my life has changed much, tackling this album. And This one, I feel a lot of appreciation, maybe because I know so little about this band, but I feel like I have a deeper understanding about a little about who they are and the incredible skill involved. And so I'm just glad it's here. I'm glad it's on the list and that we got to listen to it tonight. And I'm always appreciative, I think, when we've got a real live fan of a band on as well to give us sort of some of the passion, I think, that goes into that aspect as well. So, yeah, thanks so much, Kelly, for adding your voice as well.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I would have liked to see what else, like, Dwayne Allman would have done.
Oh, geez, yeah.
From here. Yeah. The bassist died, like, a year afterwards. Also in a motorcycle accident.
I read at the same... About a year later at the same intersection.
The same intersection, wow.
Yeah, it's very tragic.
I'm glad we got him while we had him.
Yeah, yeah. Share, you know, a little bit of time with him. Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. And as we mentioned, you know, there's no other albums. We always talk about the other albums, but this is the only one. So that just about wraps it up. Any other concluding comments?
I mean, other than go check out more Allman Brothers. Midnight Rider. Yeah. Midnight Rider is a really good song. Melissa, Jessica. There's a lot of songs about girls. So
yeah,
there's that.
Especially for those of us who are stuck at home right now with working remotely or whatnot, this is an excellent time to be digging into all the free music that's out there and go down a rabbit hole. Find something you like.
Yeah.
It's good working music, you know, a 20-minute song is gets you through.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, I want to take an opportunity one more time to thank you so much, Kelly, for joining us. It was a real pleasure talking with you and hearing about all your experiences and your passion for this music. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
You bet. Thanks, Kelly, and be well, be safe. Yeah, we're all in this together, I guess, even from a distance.
And before we sign off, Ben, what have we got coming up next time?
Yeah, we are approaching number 50 on Rolling Stone's top 500 album list. That's an exciting milestone, I think. Coming up next, yeah, we've got Here's Little Richard by Little Richard.
I saw Little Richard in...
What?
You saw Little Richard?
Yeah, I saw a compilation show. It was a Fats Domino tribute in the Superdome.
Oh, wow.
And it was, I mean, Little Richard, they rolled him out in a wheelchair and they picked him up and put him at the piano and he just like went to town, like Tutti Frutti. Wow. It was on. But like a guy like lifted him out of the wheelchair and like just set him at the piano and he
my goodness.
Did his thing. It was incredible. Yeah.
Wow.
Who else was at that show? Well, Fats was there, but he was like up in a booth. And then Chuck Berry was there and he only played for like a second. He was definitely like probably too old to be on the stage kind of thing. he didn't play like a full song. He like couldn't get through a whole song until he was done. And then like Keb Moe and Wyclef played. And
wow.
Yeah, that's a crazy show. New Orleans. Got a lot of stories about shows down there.
Well, until next time, we want all of you at home to be well, stay safe, and take care of yourselves.
Thanks again, Kelly. Have a good night, everyone.
If you like what you hear, subscribe on your favorite podcast app and write a review.
Send us a message at our Facebook page, on Instagram, or through our SoundLogic Podcast Twitter feed. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed that classic episode of ours. Tune in next time for the next album on the new 2020 Rolling Stone list.